Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're your shortcut to staying well-informed on the latest shifts in M&A, private equity, venture capital, and consulting.
Provided by Thomas Elgeier and Frenis, based on the most relevant post on LinkedIn about M&A insights in CW 3132.
And Frenis, just so you know, is a B2B market research company working with enterprises to optimize their campaigns with account and executive insights far beyond AI.
Exactly. We've sifted through all the noise on LinkedIn from calendar weeks 31 and 32.
And our mission today is really just to unpack what's shaping the deal world right now. We want to bring you the key nuggets that actually matter.
Think of it as a guide, helping you understand the why behind the trends.
Okay, let's dive in then. How about we kick things off with the broad strokes, market movements, strategic shifts. What's standing out in the M&A landscape as we look at the mid-year?
Well, one of the really insightful things is how the global M&A mid-year outlook points to a significant strategic pivot. Yeah, Anthony Bruce highlighted this. He talked about a shift from traditional health industries towards broader how we care domains.
How we care. That's interesting phrasing.
It is. And it's not just relabeling. It signals a much more holistic view of well-being driving investment. And that's expected to fuel activity through the rest of 2025.
That's a powerful shift, moving beyond just the clinical side. And I guess we're seeing similar dynamics elsewhere, like fintech, M&A.
Absolutely. Brian Reddington and Marcel Van Oost, they both noted a real acceleration there.
What's driving that?
Mostly intensified regulatory changes, competitive pressures. It's forcing companies to be much more agile. Marcel Van Oost specifically mentioned Revolut's move to acquire a U.S. bank.
Right, for faster expansion.
Exactly. A clear play to get into the American market quicker, probably sidestepping some complex licensing stuff.
Shows how crucial agility is becoming.
It really does.
Yeah.
And, despite maybe some perceived volatility, the numbers tell an interesting story, too. Well, Andrea Ward and Christopher Coomer shared some compelling data for Q2 2025. Global M&A deal values actually hit $779 billion.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And what's remarkable is that's the third highest quarterly total in over 4 years.
What's behind that number?
Largely propelled by 14 mega deals, those over $10 billion each. Christopher Coomer even spotted a record-breaking week with nearly $185 billion in announced deals.
$185 billion in 1 week.
Almost 300% up week over week. It suggests that, yeah, there might be headwinds, but the big players are making significant long-term strategic bets.
Those mega deals definitely stand out, but it's clearly not uniform across the board, is it?
No, not at all.
I saw Bain's report, Amita Cohen and Eric Pott cited it, showed growth in tech, financial services, media.
Right.
But that growth actually offset declines in industrials and healthcare, so a real mixed bag.
Definitely.
And then looking specifically at life sciences, Torsten S. Bernauer saw a 13% increase in deals in H1 2025 versus last year.
Mm-hmm. Particularly strong in EMEAS, right?
Exactly. Europe, Middle East, Africa. Yet, Tim LaShora pointed out the TMT sector, tech, media, telecom, showed resilience with stable deal value despite fewer deals. Suggests more focus on higher value transactions, maybe.
That makes sense. Higher quality, more targeted deals.
Yeah.
So this varied activity, it begs the question, what's the overall feeling? What's the outlook?
Yeah, what's the sentiment?
Well, Kizan Patel and Alistair Matchett, they highlighted insights from Goldman Sachs predicting increased overall activity.
Okay, so optimism then.
Cautious optimism, maybe. Yeah. They see it driven by corporates focusing on growth. Those mega deals again, plus disciplined sponsor activity and rising cross-border engagement, especially Europe and Asia.
Interesting.
And Michelle Ritchie also noted, M&A is actively reshaping strategies for industrials. Amar Mehta echoed that, seeing it as a crucial growth engine for industrial manufacturers, even in tougher markets. It's about strategic resilience, not just size.
It really sounds like being prepared for these evolving dynamics is just crucial for professionals, which is why things like that upcoming private equity and M&A bootcamp John Krant mentioned feel so timely, helping people get ready with valuation, structuring.
Exactly. Being proactive.
And speaking of strategy and, complexity. That leads us nicely into our next theme, doesn't it? Cross-border deal.
Yes. The complexities and the regional dynamics.
Yeah.
Because those global boundaries, they aren't just lines on a map in M&A, are they?
They certainly are not. So how are these boundaries creating new challenges or maybe opportunities right now?
Well, what's fascinating and maybe a bit concerning for some is how acqui-hire deals in big tech are getting more antitrust scrutiny.
Acqui-hires. So buying a company mainly for the talent.
Precisely. Siddharth Raja flagged this. Regulators are now recognizing competitive implications even when it's just talent being acquired, not necessarily a whole product line or market share in the traditional sense.
So they're looking at competition for human capital now.
It seems so. It challenges the old M&A regulations.
That's a huge shift. And it's not just talent, right? I saw Karan Sahi detailed how new U.S. tariffs on some Indian exports are messing with cross-border deals, too.
Mm-hmm. Complex tax and legal factors.
Yeah, things like adjusting transfer pricing between related companies, indirect taxes, needing to review holding structures.
Yeah.
Adds a lot more homework.
Absolutely. Those granular tax and legal details, they can totally make or break a cross-border deal.
Definitely.
But on a slightly more optimistic note, especially for Europe, Robert Farrington observed European M&A deal value was up materially in 2025.
Okay, what's supporting that?
Lower interest rates, better financing conditions, and, you know, just renewed investor confidence suggests a more robust environment over there.
That's good news for Europe, but it also seems like Europe's diversifying its relationships. Tuğhan Erdemi had this interesting insight about Europe shifting M&A focus towards Asia and the Middle East.
Right, for capital and growth opportunities.
And deliberately moving away from the U.S., influenced by tariffs and tech tensions.
Yeah, it signals a pretty significant geopolitical influence on where the deals are flowing.
It really underscores how geopolitics directly impacts deal geography and maybe even how deals are structured.
Exactly. And on structure, Eva Davis and Matt Stevens discussed the big differences between U.S. and European cross-border deals.
Like what kind of differences?
Things like lockbox transactions being more common in Europe, where the price is fixed earlier based on a specific balance sheet date, unlike typical U.S. closing accounts. Also, varied restrictive covenants, differences in asset deals, lots of regulatory hoops, and unique stakeholders like works councils.
Ah, the employee representation bodies. They can be crucial.
Absolutely. Roger Portnoy also reflected on these challenges, offering lessons for CEOs navigating these complex deals.
It sounds like succeeding in cross-border M&A just demands really specialized, nuanced knowledge.
No doubt.
Alan Vanderbort, talking specifically about biotech deals, laid out a framework. Deep market understanding, finding hidden value, building trust, precision, lean teams. It really hits home how tailored the approach needs to be.
Which brings us nicely to our next theme, optimizing the actual deal execution and seller preparedness.
Yeah.
Because even if you have the strategy right and understand the global stuff, just getting the deal done, that can be incredibly complex.
Right. So beyond the strategy, what are the key things for actually executing a deal smoothly or maybe not so smoothly?
Well, one fascinating point is how founder exit timelines have gotten much longer.
Mm.
Thomas Smail noted it often spans 6 to 10 years now.
6 to 10 years? Wow.
Yeah. It really underscores how vital early planning is, nurturing that exit.
Yeah.
You can't just wake up and sell. It takes years of sort of intentional prep work to get the best outcome.
That's a massive shift from the maybe quicker turnarounds people used to expect. And Oliver Bogner highlighted what buyers are willing to pay premiums for these days.
Mm-hmm. What's it out there?
Defensible market positions, predictable revenues, clear growth potential. Those get you a premium. But discounts, they come for founder-dependent businesses, unclear financials.
Right. It emphasizes that deep internal readiness before you even think about going to market.
So what are the common mistakes sellers make then? Where do they trip up?
Luke Potzel detailed a few common misconceptions in mid-market M&A that often lead to, well, poor outcomes.
Such as?
Trying to avoid advisor fees, skimping on preparing proper materials, prioritizing speed over actually being ready. Onuwa Uzor's EY Parthenon M&A stress test also hammers home this need for preparation. It's less about speed, more about being thoroughly prepared.
Which is why I suppose having a competitive process is so vital. John Marsh emphasized that, right? It should be a guiding philosophy.
Exactly. To get stronger offers, better terms. It's not just about putting a price tag on it. Let the market tell you the value.
So what does that process actually look like, timeline-wise?
James Creech gave a useful breakdown. He advises founders to plan for, realistically, a 9 to 12 month journey.
Okay, break that down.
Typically, getting organized takes maybe 4-8 weeks. Then buyer outreach is 6-10 weeks. Getting indications of interest, or IOIs, another 4-8 weeks. Then the really intense part, due diligence and negotiation, that's 8-16 weeks. Drafting the purchase agreement, 6-12 weeks. And finally, closing, maybe 1-4 weeks.
definitely a marathon, not a sprint.
For sure.
That clear roadmap seems essential. And Enzo Avigo's point reinforces this. M&A deals need strategic alignment, not just brute force. The deal has to solve a specific problem for the buyer.
Right. James McGillicuddy's analysis of eBay's failed Skype acquisition really drives that home. Strategic fit is critical. It wasn't just a good idea. It needed to fit strategically.
Yeah, that was a classic case study.
And, you know, beyond just growth, M&A can also be a tool for transformation. Michael Hoffer mentioned using M&A for cost optimization, aiming for a leaner, stronger business model.
Which aligns with Amar Mehta's point for industrial manufacturers,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Using M&A for growth and resilience. Okay, that leads us pretty naturally into the crucial area of regulatory compliance, risk mitigation, and governance. Easy places for deals to get derailed.
Absolutely. And amidst all the heightened regulatory attention we're seeing, strategic fit and solid financials, they remain absolutely core to evaluating any deal. Maybe even more so now.
Foundational elements. And Ron Klink advised that IT disaster recovery planning is becoming really integral now.
For M&A, why?
Safeguarding operational continuity, especially during post-deal scaling and integration. Making sure the business doesn't falter when systems merge.
That makes sense. Especially with complex integrations.
Yeah.
And what's really insightful, particularly in healthcare, is how systems facing cost pressures and reimbursement challenges are rethinking their M&A strategy.
How so?
Brendan Hudson highlighted this. They're looking beyond just contiguous M&A buying the hospital next door towards diversifying to maintain service quality. It signals a deeper strategic purpose than just expanding their immediate footprint.
Diversification makes sense in a tough market. And to manage specific deal risks, tax insurance seems to be playing a bigger role.
Yes. Pratesh Kathrani shared insights on using it for deal certainty. But he also pointed out some India-specific challenges,
like
limited coverage from local Indian insurers and a reluctance to cover matters already in litigation. Edward Chapman also stressed how important well-structured option plans are to avoid tax headaches during sale. Tax is definitely a minefield.
It truly can be.
And adding to the complexity, Ryan Buttman observed new state laws popping up. Washington, Colorado, for example, requiring extra filings for M&A deals.
So more paperwork, more hoops.
Yeah, it directly impacts deal execution, regulatory strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Another layer of compliance to navigate as regulations keep changing.
It's a reminder the landscape is always shifting. And speaking of shifts, Nena Evelyn Ease discussed that landmark ICC ruling about preemptive rights in oil and gas deals.
Right, the Joint Operating Agreements, or JOAs.
The ruling clarified that those rights, usually giving existing partners first dibs, if someone sells their share of an asset, don't automatically extend to when the whole company holding those assets gets acquired.
That has big implications, right?
Right.
Especially for deals like Chevron Hess.
Huge implications.
Yeah.
It impacts how these massive energy deals get structured going forward.
And finally, on the governance side, post-deal. Alexis Chevalier emphasized that the Integration Management Office, the IMO, needs to actually drive progress.
Not just report status.
Exactly. Drive progress to capture those synergies faster. It's about proactive execution, not just admin oversight.
That shift from reporting to driving progress, that's powerful. And it brings us neatly to our final theme, how innovation and technology are shaping M&A itself.
Yeah, and what's really innovative here, I think, is Atlassian's approach. Jane McGlynn pointed out they've openly published their M&A term sheet since 2019.
Published it openly.
Oh. Yeah. It challenges conventional deal terms with a really pragmatic, seller-friendly approach, fosters transparency, aims to streamline things. It's quite bold in an industry that's often, you know, pretty opaque.
That is progressive, trying to set a new standard. And speaking of innovation, PwC rolled out its Harvey AI platform, didn't they? Samir Singh and Atul Kharir shared that.
Right. The idea is faster, data-rich, deal analysis, streamlined execution for clients.
Frank Aquila also noted AI's potential in M&A, improving target identification. But he stressed human oversight is still crucial.
Absolutely critical. To avoid biases, ensure judgment. It's a tool, a powerful one, but not a replacement for human insight.
Kai Hesseman reinforced that too, right? Stressing technology is now essential for M&A success, transparency, speed, efficiency.
Even in the small cap segment, where things used to be maybe more manual or intuition-based.
And it's not just the tech itself, but the data it handles. Brian Franco discussed using customer behavior insights.
Right. To enhance business value and de-risk M&A.
Exactly. Understanding customers can uncover hidden value, mitigate risks during a deal.
And just quickly on the strategic side, James Hulse observed Daikin's systematic M&A in Japan, very focused on core business enhancement, consolidation within their industry, often smaller deals, highly disciplined.
a different approach to growth. Interesting.
Well, that seems to cover the main themes we saw.
And that's a wrap on our deep dive into the M&A insights from LinkedIn over the past couple of weeks. If you enjoyed this this deep dive, new ones drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on private equity, venture capital, and strategy and consulting.
Yeah, the world of M&A is clearly, you know, dynamic. It's constantly adapting to new tech, evolving regulations, shifting strategies. As we've seen, success often hinges not just on what you acquire,
but how you prepare, execute, and integrate.
Spot on.
That's a great point. And it leaves us maybe with this final thought for you. In a landscape increasingly shaped by data, by AI, by shifting global dynamics, how will the very definition of strategic fit continue to evolve for companies looking to grow through M&A? Something to mull over. Thank you for joining us, and remember to subscribe for more insights.